Hello and welcome to pod 28 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the official Palace app, eagles.cpfc.co.uk, and all of our social media channels, and the big screen on a match day, and next Tuesday, April the 30th, at Box Park, where we're going to be for the end of season awards do. I'll be on stage with Kelly Summers. It's free to enter, so please come along to that on Tuesday evening. You can find out all the details about that on the Palace website, cpfc.co.uk. But in podcast land, what have we got today? Well, we've got, as usual, Roy Hodgson's press conference, which will take place in the media building right after I finish recording this link, actually. Before that, we've got Statman. Statman was actually down here at the training ground this morning, so I had a little chat with him outside our building. We've also got some nice interviews from when Wilfred Zaha went back to his old primary school, Whitehorse Manor, very near to the Crystal Palace ground, because obviously he used to live in the road next to Selhurst Park. So we spoke to him and a couple of his old teachers. But before all that, something non-footbally, we've got a cricket player. Mark Butcher played over 70 test matches. Well, I don't know why I said over. He played 71 test matches for England, played for Surrey for very, very many years. And he is a Crystal Palace fan. He's a Croydon boy. He was talking this week to James Woodroof.
Cool, let's talk Palace. Funnily enough, our programme this week against Everton, the main interview is your old teacher, I believe, Steve Kemba, which is complete stroke of fortune, I must say. It wasn't a connection I was aware of.
Okay.
But it'd be great if you could sort of explain how your relationship with Palace has evolved over the years and a bit about Steve, because like, my understanding is you started as a Liverpool fan, is that right? Despite being a Croydon boy proud.
When I was a youngster. But the only team that I ever went to see was Palace. I think it was more about winning. The Liverpool thing was more about winning arguments in the playground than it was anything else. But I'd go and watch Palace because of the connection with Steve. Steve Kemba used to coach the football and cricket teams at the school that I went to in Purley, Hamley House. And my dad coached the football teams. So they were a partnership. So when my dad wasn't playing for Surrey in the winters, he and Steve were looking after the sport at the prep school that we went to. And myself and Steve's eldest son, Matthew, I was best man at his wedding, he was best man at mine, since we've been mates since we were 6 or 7 years old. And so the families are very sort of close together. Zimmer, as we call him, is a great man. I think he was 70 when he last. It was last September. So, but still as full of life and with an eye for a player and loves his sport as much as he ever did.
Yeah, amazing. So when you were obviously going to see Palace but Liverpool in the 80s were obviously dominant. When did you sort of go all in for Palace? Would you say?
I don't know. I can't remember. I mean, I obviously remember going to watch the guys like Ben Flair and Jim Cannon. And those fellas during the 80s, and I can't really put a time. Yeah. Probably when it became embarrassing to say that I was a Liverpool fan. You know, I was kind of a little bit older, probably 17, 18, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'd get down to Selhurst Park on a relatively regular basis to see some of the sides in the 90s. Bloody played golf with Brighty a little while ago at Addington. So there's always been that connection there. Well, we kind of bumped into each other and played sort of 7 holes together, I think, the last time I saw him. So there was no winner. We were just kind of catching up.
I'm sure he'll tell me a different story and tell me that he beat you by a few shots.
Yeah. I mean, this was a little, probably. But you know, Brighty, he's not going to even say anything else, is he? So the connection has always been there. There's family connection, more than anything else.
Oh, brilliant. And have you, you mentioned Jim Cannon, have you, over the last 30-odd years, like any other players that stand out for you as particular favourites?
Well, I mean, you'd go a long way to go against Brighton Wright, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jeff Thomas was always a, you know, I liked central midfield players. I was always kind of a big fan of the guys in that area of the field. The guys who are playing at the minute, there's a couple of fellas who will be firm favourites for a while if they end up staying around. I mean, I was at the Huddersfield game a couple of weeks back, mm-hmm. and watched Aaron Wan-Bissaka for the first time live, and was like, wow, he's got something. He's a serious player, and sort of pace and time, and kind of looks like he reads the game sort of way beyond his age. Mm. So there's a, hopefully, as opposed to sort of talking about the old warriors from the past who might have a beer with over at Whiteley Football Club.
Yeah, it's I suppose, like, it'd be good to get your perception on. Obviously, the club, following when Arsenal has secured Premier League status for 7 years, which is a club record in the top flight, regardless of whether it's Premier League or Division One. Would you say that we might be entering a bit of a golden era for the club?
Possibly. I mean, you know, I almost go back to the idea, that sort of Surrey idea of kind of being able to bring through your own young players and not being afraid to kind of to send them out there, to go out there and do the work if you feel they're good enough. And in doing so, I guess there's a pride around playing, you know, for the shirt, but there's also a kind of the belief that you get when you understand that a manager, somebody like Roy Hodgson, who's been everywhere, seen everything, done everything, has a belief in you at that age, that you can. That he believes that you're good enough to go out there and stride the field with some of the best players in the world. You know, you end up with five or six guys in a team with that around about the same age group, with the same sort of drive and the same ambition. It's amazing what can be achieved under those circumstances. Of course, you have, you know, unlike cricket, you have more chances that they'll be split up and picked off and sent and bought by bigger clubs or whatever. But there is, you know, all the while that you're able to sort of produce that from within, and you're not relying on having to buy people who are perhaps on the wrong end of their careers or whatever to help you out of trouble, the better chance you have of being able to sustain some sort of success. And that's what it, I mean, I, you know, who am I to say, but that's what it looks like the club are trying to do. And what Roy is trying to do is trying to keep a basis of lads that are kind of, that know each other and kind of understand what it's like to play for the team and all that kind of stuff, and it's paying dividends for
them. It's a really fascinating observation, actually. I think you struck on so many chords that really, really do ring true through the club. You mentioned Roy. Which Palace manager, if you were, obviously, if your career path had taken a slightly different take and you'd gone down playing centre mid and potentially at Palace, which Palace manager would you have liked to play under?
Well, it would have been quite good fun to play at Steve Cockle's time, wouldn't it? Yeah. And Alan, and I know Smithy pretty well, Alan Smith, so it would have been great to have played just to hear his team talks at half time. That's entertainment in itself, is listening to Al when he gets going. So, there's a couple that I wouldn't have minded sharing the dressing room with for a time.
I bet. Thinking about the Surrey and England dressing rooms back in your day, which football was a hot topic amongst your dressing rooms? Were you the only Palace voice, would you say, or were there others?
I would have been the only one. That obviously Stuart and Thorpe were both Chelsea fans, big Chelsea fans. But Martin Bicknell, 1,000 first class wickets. Martin Bicknell, born and bred in Guildford. Was a Leeds United fan for no discernible reason that any of us could come up with. And as with all cricket players, we all wish we'd played football instead. It's kind of like it always turns out to be the most fun part of the day is the warm-ups in the morning if we're allowed to get the ball out. So,
and were you allowed throughout most of your career?
We did. We had periods of time where we were allowed, and then, you know, things got a bit tasty. Then we'd have to put the ball away and we'd have to go and catch some balls instead. But we'd always manage to persuade the coaches that it was a much better idea, much better for our morale. Over a long season, if we were allowed to play football, than if we weren't. So, fair enough.
Who was the best, would you say, of your cricketers with the ball at their feet?
Well, I mean, Stewie was handy. He was a decent player in his youth, as was Graham Thorpe. I think he played it. He might have had a little bit of a bit of time as a youth in looking at playing sort of football at a higher level.
Mm.
But I wasn't too bad. I held a few Shirley district records in my day back in my youth as a centre forward. So the Surrey boys could play a little bit, and then of course we'd have our Pakistani imports, people like Saklane Mushtaq and Azam Mahmood, who were utterly hopeless, but got so caught up in the sort of in how enthusiastic we were about the game that they loved it as much as we did. So it was always good fun.
That is brilliant. Love it. Now I sent you a picture on WhatsApp. Cast your mind back to 2005-06, and you were invited by the club to launch the new home and away kit with Andy Johnson. What are your memories of that day?
I remember that. We were in Alders or something, weren't we? And before the that Alders store in the Whitgift Centre was closed and turned, I don't know what it's been turned into now, but I think it was in there.
Brilliant.
I'd been out injured for quite a long time over this wrist injury that sort of ended my England career. And so I remember going down, having no idea what I was doing there really, and I don't think they knew who I was.
Brilliant.
So it was one of those, an embarrassing photograph taken with all sort of confused.
I can only assume, Mark, that you turned up in smart shoes, because in the photos that I've got, you're not wearing any shoes.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting to have been put in the Palace kit, I don't think.
Amazing.
One of the great days, and I looked at, you sent me that photograph, and I didn't even recognise myself in that. So there you go.
It's
horrendous.
It raised a smile in the office, I must say.
Yeah, it did.
Obviously, I've seen your flourishing music career, and you're obviously still on Sky Sports. Are you up to anything else at the moment that the fans might be interested to know about?
I've got another album coming out in July, which is kind of 90% written by myself in partnership with a couple of guys. So that's album number two. That'll be coming out just around about sort of like the end of the World Cup, I guess. And the other stuff is mainly TV related, really. Whether it be working for Sky Sports, or I do some presenting over in India for Sony TV, and tons of stuff. The cricket season never finishes, so there's always work to be done. It's not a bad life. I kind of I would say to people that the idea was to see if I could get through until my retirement without having to have had a proper job, and I've managed to scam it so far.
You're doing a great effort there, Mark, I must say. Final one from me, Mark. I appreciate you're a busy man, but I've got a final question, bit of fun. If you could do your career all over again, would you rather, you can only choose one of these, score a test double 100 at Lord's or the Oval, forge a one-day international career and win the World Cup, score a T20 100 in the IPL, earning loads of money, or bag a hat trick at Sellers Park, or even write a number one song?
Now you're asking. Well, we'll park all the cricket stuff. I mean, that's been there, done all that. But no, I haven't done it. I've not done it as well as any of those things. But I've had a go. So hat trick at Sellers Park. I did once score a penalty in a penalty shootout at Sellers Park as a schoolboy. So we're going for the number one. One of the tunes off my album Now Playing is going to go to number one in August. That'd be the one I'll take.
Well, I wish you all the best with that, and fingers crossed it happens.
Mark Butcher there. That was a very, very entertaining chat. And James sounded like he had lots of fun there, because James is a massive cricket fan. Moving on to Wilfred Zaha's visit to his old primary school. It was brilliant. Palace for Life Foundation put it on. He went into the assembly. The kids were screaming. They went absolutely mad for him. Then he did a little quiz with them. So we spoke to him just after that, outside in the school grounds. And then afterwards, we've got a little chat that I had with Lynn Sampson Sampson, who was the head of the infant school when he joined, and Michael Stevenson, who I think was his year five teacher, and Wilf posted on Instagram afterwards that it was his favourite teacher, and he was a really nice guy. So here's all the audio from that. So we've just come out of the assembly, and you're back at your old school. How was that?
It was amazing, man. Obviously, seeing familiar faces and just being back here in general. Obviously, a lot's changed, but just nice to be back.
How old were you when you first started here?
Probably like 4 or 5. Yeah, at 4.
So what was the school like for you then? It must have been crazy because you didn't really speak English then.
Yeah, I didn't, to be honest. But I made a few friends. Like one of my friends, Javan, I'm still friends with him now. He actually kind of helped me learn English. So yeah, I had a few friends that helped me through everything.
And I saw you chatting to some of the teachers that were here when you were here.
Yeah, it's crazy because I'm thinking to myself, like when I was coming, I'm thinking it, like they must have gone by now. But like my old head teacher, like a few teachers that taught me are still here. So yeah, it's nice to see them.
And if you were one of the kids in that audience when they were going crazy, who would have made you go crazy like that when you were younger here?
I used to love Ronaldinho, just how he played and just the entertainment aspect of how he played. So yeah, seeing him, I would have been screaming my head off like these kids.
And could you have ever imagined when you were at the school that you'd be coming back one day and talking to the whole school?
No, it's like it's a dream, really. Obviously, even when one of the kids asked me, what would you do if you didn't play football? Like, my mindset was just to play football. That's all I ever thought about. So it's nice to obviously be here before, then come back as a professional footballer, which was my goal. So yes, it's an achievement, massive.
So where's Wolf?
Okay, so he's up here at the back. Here he is. And this, we think, is when he was in year two here. So he joined us in reception. He and his mum came over from the Ivory Coast. He was extremely nervous. And he went into red class and had a wonderful teacher called Pam, who sadly we've lost, but she really looked after him. And he's told us how much he remembers her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what was your role at the time?
I was the head of the school. So I remember the day Wilfred arrived with his mum. I think they came as refugees from the Ivory Coast. So he joined the class a little later than other children, but soon settled in and made friends with children who are still his friends today.
Yeah, what was he like? What's it like for someone coming when they don't speak the language?
It's tricky, and that's for lots of our children, absolutely. Michael, isn't
it? Yep.
Especially like Wilfred, you've fled a country where you've left and there's been danger. So he was nervous and shy, and the children still soon made him welcome. The teacher was just lovely to him. But you're right, he didn't have English to begin with.
So, Michael, what's your first memory then?
So, I taught Wilfred in year five. So, by that time, he's sort of 9 or 10. And I'm just looking, actually, because I can see he's there with a group of his friends.
Yeah.
And they were a very friendly group of children. It was all about football. and there were quite a few of them, actually. It was about him and maybe two or three others who all went to play at Crystal Palace. And I suppose he's the one that kept progressing. But he was an absolute perfectionist. And that I do remember. I can remember him doing a piece of work and making a mistake and getting quite upset because there was, you know, this beautiful piece of work, there's one little error on it, but that's what he sort of focused on. I have fond memories of watching the school football team. There was a particular game where he was dribbling down the wing. He had two players coming towards him and he did this sort of pirouette between them. One went that way, one went that way. He went through the middle. And I suppose you sort of knew then there was a difference between him and the other players.
So what's it been like for you seeing him become like a
fantastic
Premier League superstar?
Yeah, it's really
it's honestly, it's brilliant. I the last time I saw Wilfred, I was on a bus coming home from work, and he was on there. So this is before, I suppose, he'd really made it because he was still travelling on buses. And I just, you know, there was just a, all right, sir. And literally next to me, you know, hood down, there was Wilfred. And I mean, it's been wonderful watching his career. He was a lovely lad while he was here.
And then what? Been amazing for you,
Oh, really excited. And meeting him again today, I just want to know that his mum was okay, because I remember things were tough for her. He was just as humble, wasn't he?
Yeah. Did you meet Mum today?
No, I asked him how his mum was because I remember things being tough for her. Yeah. So I was pleased to see that he said, she's got a bigger house now. I thought, I thought she probably would. But no, lovely to see him. And I think it was our sports coach that kind of spotted
him. Mr. Smith, yes.
And he still works with us now, so it's really nice. Yeah.
And finally, how inspirational would it be for the kids?
Massively. His name is known throughout the school, you know. Funny enough, I was in year six last year, and I mean, they spoke about Zaha, you know, all the time. It's a shame some of those children, you know, weren't here today. But he's very inspirational.
Yeah. It's nice.
It's
went really well.
Oh, that was lovely, wasn't it? Okay, moving on to Statman, who, for some reason, was let through the gates at the training ground today.
I'm the Statman.
Yes, that's right. We're down at the training ground this time. Statman, how do you feel to be down here?
Well, this is your world, Chris, isn't it? This really is your world. Normally, we do it at my place, don't we? We go down cellars. That's where my offices are. But no, you said, no, come to mine. And here we are.
Welcome to my turf. Literally, my turf right in front of me. Look at that green grass. It's beautiful, isn't it?
I've been here four times before. Once delivering Nando's to players, and I think three other times, I can't remember, very forgetful, but this is your world, mate.
So this is my place of work.
Instead of you talking, you know, getting me to talk through, I don't know, the changing rooms, the boardroom, wherever we go, how about you, mate? How about you talk us through here? Talk us through the training ground.
Well, we're currently stood outside the media building, which is
it's the least impressive building of the lot.
It's a white bungalow. It used to be... Is that pebble? That's not pebble dash, is it? But it's white stone kind of thing
like
on the outside.
It looks like a beach hut in Devon.
Yeah, it does. It's lovely. It's what you can see on the live streams of the 23s games in the background.
Yeah.
So this used to be the academy building, but they're now down at goals. So I mean, we did have a tiny office in there last season, but over the summer last year, jackpot, we got our own building. So they moved the press conference room down from, it used to be in the main building.
Yep.
Used to be a meeting room, which is now like a lounge area, an extension of the canteen.
Oh, yeah.
And they moved their meeting room into I did a pub from there the other week.
Yeah.
I talked about, but in here is the main press conference room with the ad board where we do that. But then all the web guys and social media guys work down here as well. And some of them work up
in
London.
You know, I also like saying a press room that we unveil signings here. That room is a tiny old press conference room, isn't it? You're not unveiling any signings in there.
Well, you say that, but we have unveiled signings.
Oh, right, here we go. So it's this time.
Well, yeah, there's an extra ad board that just has Manbet on it.
Yeah, good.
So that's
good
just
man.
For signings.
Good man. Commercial obligations.
They pay for that. So that is only ever used for signings.
Okay.
Interesting there. But the green grass of Beckenham.
So well, talk us through the sights then. I mean, as I'm looking, can I just picture the scene? You can film me in here.
Picture the scene.
We've got six heavy duty sprinklers watering what is already a very moist pitch. The Kent County Cricket emblem shines down from upon the hill there. Do you want to explain that? Why we've got that going on?
Well, they've got a ground there.
Well, just for listeners that don't know.
Oh, for listeners that don't know, Kent.
I'm well aware.
They play some games right next door. Yeah. And if you live in those block of flats, some of them have a view where you can see the Palace training ground on one side and a game of cricket on the other.
Oh, that I want that to be my retirement
flat. I went round there once. A friend of a friend had a... I say friend of friend, he was an ex-girlfriend's granddad, had a flat in there. And they all just sat on the balcony and watched the 2020 game. Brilliant.
Sorry, I'm not done with how you got yourself into that situation. An ex-girlfriend's granddad?
Yeah.
But you obviously with the ex-girlfriend.
We don't talk about ex-girlfriends.
No,
get married
don't.
In the summer.
Sorry, future Mrs. Grierson.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, but this is the scene very much so. Is it always water? Because I've never come here and the sprinklers haven't been on.
Yeah, it's always wet. Because with the football pitches, they drain very quickly.
Yeah.
They're designed like that so that if there is heavy rainfall, it doesn't collect. So you've got to sprinkle it.
Because this is the question. Fans always say this, don't they? Before half time, they go, why are they putting the sprinklers on? Even on like when it's been raining.
Oh, because it just soaks straight through.
Yeah.
Because it's an amazing pitch.
Yeah. And the undersoil heating, I imagine, is that on the whole time or that's what?
I don't know.
Very technical questions.
I don't know.
I feel we need groundsmen.
We'll make videos. Don't worry, we've got the whole summer to do that.
Good man.
Actually, one of the groundsmen's already brought me up on the fact I said we were going to do something about that pitch over there that's been dug up. I think he's desperate to get on camera.
Yeah.
And I know
yeah.
he's listening. So.
Well, as you do with me, if you've got a face for radio, get him on the podcast instead. I think it's,
yeah, exactly.
it's probably the way
exactly.
to go.
yeah, and then in the main building, there's loads of cool stuff. But yeah, this is where I work four or 5 days a week.
Well, that was lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome.
But what I will say is on the main building there, which is to our right now as we're looking at it, lovely little balcony area.
Yeah.
Is that a barbecue I can see covered up?
No.
What a lovely scene that would be, eh?
That would be nice. No, it's like a high table and stools. You can sit out there when it's nice.
Oh, okay.
It's a table that we filmed Bakary Sacco's My Boots feature.
Oh, my favourite feature.
Yeah. It's hard to film up there, though, because of the roof. It creates, like, shade, and you end up, like, because you get the brightness behind, it was a bit overexposed. So that's why we don't film that much over there. It doesn't look nice.
See, whenever building a project, always consult with Chris Grierson.
Exactly.
You know, media.
Well, sadly, that was built pre.
Well, exactly. Rio. The new stand, how much say have you had on that?
Well, you know, I'm involved from the start. I'll be planting the cornerstone or whatever.
Just on that, actually, I'm interested because I know the commercial sides, we're, you know, tripling our hospitality covers. Media-wise, what are you excited from the new stand? Have you got some new stuff going on there? Are we moving the press conference room? Is that going to stay?
Well,
you don't know the answer to these
questions.
It's quite
way in the future, isn't it? You
know, yeah. Well, no,
it's presenting Match of the Day, but no one. Yeah, it looks like, from looking at the blueprint, which I think was online on the council thing, yeah, it looks like there's going to be whole new facilities.
Yeah. Okay.
New gallery.
Oh, it's
very exciting.
It's very exciting. Yeah. I'm not crying, by the way. I'm just very sensitive and my eyes are watering.
Oh, yeah, we are outside. It's not a place for hay fever here.
No, it's not.
Sam Jordan, who's sadly no longer with us.
Rest in peace.
Yes, he...
He's not died, sorry. Let me say rest in peace.
He suffered very badly from hay fever. So working on a field... wasn't the best thing for him.
I think you're triggering it here as we speak. Can I divulge into the stats before I get completely
stats
set off
followed
here?
By Perrotin.
Right. Well, as you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful sunny summer, well, spring day here on Friday. Storm Hannah is on the way, though, isn't she?
She is, yeah.
I hear she's on the way. And, you know, very negative news with that coming on. I heard it, you know, the weather news this morning. I don't bring any better news with my stats.
Everton.
Any better news? No. Mm. No, does that surprise you?
Well, I listened to the 5-year plan podcast, and I know Adam Sells was talking about, but I don't think we've beaten them at home since we came back up.
Yep.
But away from home, it's been nice.
Has it?
Yeah.
When was our last win at Goodison? Not that we're playing there, but
if I imagine this, was it, say, it's be like 2015? Was it in
close.
That season?
Yeah, 2014. So the 14-15 season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 3-2, Fraser Campbell, Jedinak and Bolasie were the goals. Do you remember? Were you with us then?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Yes. No.
No. In the away end, probably.
When was it?
2014, September. 2014.
No, it started October.
Oh, okay. So off the back of that win. Well, anyway, that was our last win against them in the Prem. So you're going that far back. So we're winless in our last 8 Premier League games against Everton.
Oh, my God.
Which is negative in itself. You can't get like that with my first stat, or I don't know where you'll be after I finish this
segment. Carry on.
It's the home form, though, against Everton that really worries me. So Everton are unbeaten in their last 7 games at Selhurst. They've won 4 and drawn 3 of those, and they haven't lost here since 1994.
My word. But saying that, it feels like a lot of games recently have been like Newcastle. It was like, well, congratulations, it was the first win since 1998. And then Arsenal, obviously.
Yeah.
That was
yep.
94, wasn't it?
So are you going to you'll be using that then, I imagine.
Yeah, tell
if
me
we,
again.
If we win, 1994, the last 1994. Time Palace beat Everton.
What was the score? You haven't
got
that, have you?
No, I haven't got that.
Okay,
please don't ask that again.
I'm going to have to look that up now.
Yeah, you will. 1994.
Research.
So that's a little negative. Also, we've got to mention it now because it keeps rumbling on. This weird sequence of results now. 9 matches we've been going. Win-lose, 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 win-lose. All the way through now. 9 times.
Wow.
Negatively now, obviously, back off that win against Arsenal. That would hint at a defeat this time round.
No, we're going to win. But you should say that. I can't remember if I said this before. My theory, because the feeling amongst a lot of fans is that I've been underwhelmed with the season. Like, disappointed, maybe too strong word.
Yeah.
But I think it's because we've only won back-to-back games once all season.
Once.
He was Leicester, yes, followed by Man City.
Yeah, thank you.
So we haven't had that feeling of like, yeah, oh my God, we've won four in a row.
Yes.
Or we've got an amazing run.
Yep.
But at the same time, we haven't gone on like a massive losing run. I think the very start of the season was
absolutely
a difficult one, but even then, yep, the games were really close.
Yeah.
So we haven't had like, yeah, elation, yes, or despair.
Yeah.
But we're still in with a chance of getting our highest ever points total in the Premier League.
Absolutely. No, I'd fully agree with that. Funnily enough, we were just talking about that in the media room. And
oh God, I gave an opinion.
You gave an opinion?
Oh, I think I'm going to, yeah, melt.
But to further that, I think that we, fans as well, the home form, that's been the issue, hasn't it? They've only seen us win four times at home. So, I mean, we've had some amazing days on the road. That's what the media boys were all saying, because they cover every single away game. I think we've been fantastic this season.
Yeah, do you know what games I haven't worked?
Probably all the wins. So Man City
away. Liverpool away when they lost. But Arsenal away, yeah, I was in Cornwall last weekend.
Yeah.
Leicester away. Yeah. Burnley away.
Do you know why that is?
Doncaster away, which we won.
Okay.
Didn't actually get to it because of the trains.
I feel that the players feel that the pressure's off when Grierson's not there, yeah, watching.
When they know they're not going to get interrogated with such questions like, thoughts on the game? What did you change at half time?
All the usual, all the doors.
What was it like for you?
Oh, easy. Don't put him on the spot with that.
Oh, you've been out for a few games, but you played 70 minutes. How are you feeling after that?
See, you shouldn't put them on the spot with those,
I
mate.
I know, it's terrible, that's isn't all. It? I need to be nicer.
Exactly. Maybe our waveform will be better when you follow us then as well. But anyway, sorry, to further point, yeah, I think that's probably a lot of the feeling maybe amongst Palace fans, that they just haven't seen their team physically win, haven't they? In person, they haven't seen it, which, you know, I think I heard a Roy quote the other day, which was, you know, of our 12 wins, obviously 8 away, 4 at home. He would have loved that to be the other way around, just so that the more Palace fans could have seen us win, which is a lovely thing to say.
Kind of. Yeah, but then what about all the away fans that spent all their money travelling up
They can have the four, I estimate they'll also be at the home games as well.
How about 19 home wins and 19 away wins?
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, I mean, we can.
But obviously, I'm not going to contradict Roy. That is an opinion. I was just giving an alternate view to make the away fans feel happy.
Disclaimer. Can we edit this bit out? Sorry, is this the bit we have to say? Can we edit this bit out?
No, we'll keep it.
Okay, we keep it in. Sorry, we briefly drifted off there, and
we
I need
get
to get
over 1,000 listeners. Can I just point that out?
What we have?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
When?
About 1,500 a week we get.
We got our first piece of feedback as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Someone wanted you on the whole pod.
Yeah, I slipped. Yeah, yes. It's my mate of mine. I went to uni with him, yeah.
Not going to happen.
Right, sorry. Let's get on the negativity. So, yeah, sequence of results. Let's go Everton as well. So, we're looking at not looking
struggling
great.
Struggling with your scrappy bit of paper there, aren't you?
Struggling a bit,
because just to let you know, everyone, this week, I don't know if it sounds any better, but this time, instead of holding our Zoom recorder
or
pointing
mobile
it back
phone
and forth between mouth. Yeah, mobile phone it was the other week. I've given Statman his own microphone and I'm holding my own one. But he's struggling with the holding the microphone and holding his stats.
With the wind and the hay fever and being outside. A lovely image. Let's get back to it. So Everton, they are in sparkling form as well. So we're not just taking on, you know, a side who we've got a previous bad record against. We're playing a side in incredible form. That 4-0 win over Man U, of course, just recently. And they've won 4 of their last 5 Premier League games, keeping a clean sheet in each of those 4 victories. So, yeah, not a great time.
Done all right, hasn't he, their manager? Seeing as everyone said, what's he ever done?
Yeah.
Where he's gone, he's failed. It's done all right.
Well, is that just your textbook Northern fan, that impression?
That was sudden.
So, oh, right, sorry. What's he ever done?
Sorry.
Yeah, Bob, get relegated.
Anything different to Putney's?
Yeah, no.
Northern,
Richmond boys.
What's the other one? Oh, Klopp.
Yeah.
With Liverpool.
Yeah.
Doing amazingly well. Remember when people said, he's only still in a job because he's funny?
Yeah.
Everyone loves him because he's wacky? Okay.
Will they win something, though? Just on a slight segment here on Liverpool. They are the eternal bottlers, aren't they?
I hope they don't. It's just really funny.
I suppose it would be, wouldn't it? If they get the highest, one of the highest ever
could
points
they
totals.
They get 97 points and finish second, I think they could.
Which we'd all love that, wouldn't we? That would be insane. And Champions League, are they going to win that? Probably not. Get knocked out by Barca. So semi-finals and second place.
Not bad, is it?
Well, yeah, but it's...
Not a trophy, though.
But exactly. And again, it'll be like, oh, I've played well, but no trophy at the end of it.
Yeah.
So. Oh, well, we love it.
Look at us having a general Premier League chat. So you don't have to be a Palace fan to listen to this podcast. So I don't know why I'm talking to you, because you're already listening to it. Carry on, Statman.
Get your friends listening. Right, men to watch then for Saturday. Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Statman's Men to Watch.
Men to Watch. Can we get a slight segment with that, maybe? Can you record that bit next time?
Yeah, okay.
Men to Watch.
Yeah, Men to Watch.
It's normally one. Yeah, okay. Anyway, Gylfi Sigurdsson involved in 7 Premier League goals against Palace. So 3 goals and 4 assists. So he does love playing against us.
Yeah.
You can picture some goals.
Yada, Gylfi.
We'll get him. Interesting stat then for you.
Oh, interesting stat. Yeah. And it's written down on your bit of paper bold, underlined, interesting stat.
I regret writing that because that implies that every other stat isn't interesting.
Does this mean that this isn't from Opta? Or is this from Opta?
No, this is... Sadly, Dan Blundell's been on holiday this week.
Oh, really?
So if you wonder why these stats are particularly negative...
Is he still off today? I've got some tickets on his...
He's back.
Okay,
he's back
today. I'll give him a call.
Sorry, give him a call about your ticket. Sorry. Right, interesting stat then. Milivojevic, positively, he's become our all-time second highest Premier League goal scorer.
Wow.
Which is amazing, yeah. I think, the small time he's been here. But worryingly, he's scored 50% now of all of our home goals this season, which is... unbelievable when you think about that.
Yeah.
And he's this will blow you away. Blow your little socks off.
Well, it's quite windy.
That'll blow it away as well. He's the only Palace player to score more than once at Sellers Park this season. Only Palace player. Everyone's popped up with one here. Jimmy Mack, Jeff Schlupp, Wilf Saha.
No one's got a brace.
No. I mean, as in he's scored more than once.
No one's scored more than one?
No.
No.
There we go. Oh, you don't often get that reaction from Chris. It's got to be a good stat.
Wow, that's an interesting stat. I thought you meant no one's got a brace.
No. Well, don't think they have played this season at home.
I've got one. I'm wearing Invisalign. That's why
so
I can't get my
upper and bottom.
Brace out. Upper and bottom,
top back.
Finished.
Yeah, yeah. Richmond dentists?
Yeah.
Probably share the same one.
Yeah.
Anyway, slide segment. Let's not go on to
orthodontry.
Yeah, I couldn't get that out.
Orthodontistry.
That's what I wanted to say. Yeah, dentistry. Anyway, so yeah, that's worrying that no other Palace player scored more than once. And Wilf Saha, let's talk about him for a bit. He's now on 9 Premier League goals. He's never got 10. Never got double figures. Can he do it on Saturday?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Will he do it on Saturday?
Yes.
Yes. Good. If he does, then obviously gets double figures. I still think then, looking at the table, just trying to be a bit optimistic now, and what a win would mean. If we went on Saturday, we'd then mathematically Brighton can't catch us. They can't go ahead of us. So that would be just quite nice.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Well, we've forgotten about them anyway. We'll leave them to fight Cardiff down there. So
yeah.
That's irrelevant. However, we're talking about the highest points total. I was looking at, as well, a highest league finish. Now, I'm just being ultimately hugely optimistic here. This would require... 3 wins.
Well, 10th is our highest, isn't it?
10th is our highest, absolutely, 2014. So Leicester are 6 points ahead of us in 10th. Obviously, West Ham just above us in 11th. Everton, though, are 7 points above us in 9th. Could we get that 9th spot? So obviously playing Everton.
Yeah,
we get 3 points off them.
Win our last two. Could happen.
We always go on about the battle of Champions League, battle, you know, relegation. What about the battle for 9th?
Let's do it. Each place is worth so much money, isn't it?
2.4 million.
And I'd quite like an espresso machine in my office so that I don't have to go into the main building.
There we go.
To get a coffee.
Are we listening, Steve Parrish? Sorry. Chris Grierson does get mightily thirsty here.
Yeah, and some oat milk as well.
Yeah.
I've only got coconut.
Well, you can share with Max Mayer.
Well, he has coconut, so I'm having to use his coconut milk.
Does he know?
He doesn't know.
I think he will now. He's not listening to this.
He's not bringing it in himself.
Well, yeah.
I think he's just made a request.
Okay, yeah.
Coconut porridge this morning, though, which is a nice touch. Never used to get that.
Yeah, no, not for that then. So they all put their... That's quite an interesting point there. So they all put specific points and dietary requirements in.
No, I think it's probably just that. Probably maybe there was only milk and he said, would it be possible to get coconut milk?
Oh, okay. It's not much of a story then, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah, no, okay.
No, they get given what they're given.
Okay. Well, you keep sharing his then. What I do want to ask then, again then, so I've, as I've come here, like I said, never been here to training ground before. I've driven for the first time. Do you drive here when you come in?
I do now, yeah.
Would have loved a little heads up on that one.
Oh, sorry. I've free parking on the road after 9:30.
Yeah, wish I'd known that, mate. I've come in. I've sauntered in here.
Oh, no.
Gates have opened. I thought, they know who I am. Statman's here. Gates have just opened straight away. I've come in. Wheeled it round. I'm in a little Mini Cooper, white Mini Cooper. Wheeled it round to the right. I've parked. Yeah, look out. Well, no, I say would
you
look
work
out.
For Foxtons?
You do get given them, don't you? Is it Foxtons that give them?
They drive Minis, don't they?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never go with... I mean, I'm sure they're very good.
reliable.
Estate agent, yeah.
Yeah, for an estate agent. Anyway, rolled it in then to the right. I've gone next to BMW. And I think that was
you tried to park in the main car park?
Yeah. I'm
a stat man.
Yeah, sorry. Well, here we go. Well, you're giving me this reaction. Would have loved a heads up there. I've parked
in
there.
Before.
Bloke's come straight up to me and gone.
Yeah, security's tight here, man. Premier League football club training ground.
And they're thinking, who have we signed in a Mini Cooper? But then I'm thinking, does he not listen to the pod?
No. I can tell you now. No. Who was it? Was it Pete or AD?
AD.
Okay.
Have a word, mate.
Yeah. Well, good. Where did you park in the end?
I've gone on the road.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
I used to park on the road, but now I've got... There's room for me now.
Oh, is there?
Enough players went out on loan for me to get a space.
So there's an interesting point.
I'm in the overflow car park.
With our depleting squad, that now means that Chris Grierson can park his car at the training ground.
Yep. So as long as we don't sign anyone, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Just let a few more go, a few more spaces. You might even get your own space.
There we go. Well, let's hope so too. Sorry, what are we up to?
Just go have a look. Is this a long one? I can't read it because of the sunshine.
Okay. Well, can I end on
long.
2 points?
Feels really long.
It does feel long,
oh,
doesn't
God.
It? But then the one piece of feedback we've ever had.
Make it longer.
Make it longer. So two questions to end with here.
Yep.
Number one, let's go for, after all those stats, let's go for your prediction. And I like to know if you've listened here or you just go straight away, you go 4-0 Palace every time. But off the back of those stats, our form, your knowledge, everything, prediction for Saturday.
I'm going to go with the classic 2-1 Palace.
You've gone that every time I've ever asked you. Ask you score a Zaha, he'll be in
Zaha
there.
And Milivojevic. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I don't know why I bother. Can you give me another prediction? I'm not having 2-1.
No, I'll give you another one. Okay, this one. This one's genuine. This one is actually going to happen. Okay?
Okay.
Crystal Palace, 4. Everton, 3.
Okay. Madness. On the basis of what?
It's going to be...
On the basis of what? What statistics?
Benteke brace.
Lovely. First man scored 2 goals at home this season.
Yes. No, Luka got a brace, didn't he?
Other
two
than Luka Milivojevic.
Benteke brace. And then Scott Dan's going to score.
Oh, I like this.
Yep.
Corner.
And Max Meyer's going to score.
And Max Meyer.
And Wolf isn't. There you go.
Okay. I tell you what, if you really want to throw the bat out there, I thought you were going to say Wan-Bissaka for his first goal. The scenes when he finally gets that first goal are phenomenal. So we've got that one. That's 4-3. For me, off the back of my stats, I'm going to be positive here, as positive as I can be, 0-0.
Okay,
I think
enough.
Our clean sheet record has been phenomenal. I think we'll back that up. Struggle to score against them. They've been in good form. I think we'll both take 0-0 right now. If I offered it to you, would you take it?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. Yeah, doesn't
any other sense. Questions?
Right. Favourite moment of the season? So far.
Oh, favourite moment of the season.
Yeah. Put you on the spot.
Honestly, I don't, because I haven't been there for any
good
time. I mean, and I've obviously, you know, I did manage to like accidentally pick up a Hong Kong channel from a TV in Cornwall when I was down there, so I could watch the Arsenal game.
Oh, that's fantastic.
LE Sports.
Yeah.
Somehow managed to get that. It must have been a problem with the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, honestly, I couldn't... What was the best bit of the season been?
Personally, maybe you mugging off that... Was it a United fan at half-time?
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that's that up fun. There. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just put that me. It's all about me.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, my favourite moment too, that one. Yeah. Chrissy Grierson's moment. Well, thank you. Well, I've got lots of stats to end the season with for Bournemouth. We'll do more of an end-of-season one there.
Oh, okay, cool.
Really summarise everything for you.
You might get your own... I could give you your own pod if you want. We could do a Statman special.
Oh,
do a normal pod, and then you could do a season roundup one with all the...
Oh, yeah, let's do that, mate.
Get Blundell on the buzzer.
Yeah, get Blundell on, yeah.
Right, thank you for joining me here today. Oh, one thing I'll say, good luck to all the boys playing in the Renf game, the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund game. Palace against Brighton fans tonight down in Worthing.
Yep.
Bring it home, boys.
Yeah. And all Palace fans running the marathon.
Yes. Not me. I pulled out. I pulled my bum muscle. And then I was just busy, had a puppy. Right, bye. Statman there. And now here is the traditional, very short link where I just say, here's Roy's weekly press conference. Okay, guys, see you next week.
Very nice to see you again. It's looking like another mid-table finish. How happy are you with that?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I mean, I think there's been long periods during the season. We've had to have a very long look over our shoulders and hope that we weren't going to be dragged into the relegation zone or a serious relegation battle with a few games to go. So to finish, if you like, safe in the league as we have done with so many games to spare, that in itself we regard as something that we can be proud of. And if we can actually finish in the middle of the table or roughly where we are at the moment, I think we can say we've had a good season.
But when you get an injury, it always seems to be a bad injury. So you had a patched up side Saturday, but you played so well at Arsenal. Is that a sign where, you know, when you are good, you can really hurt the top sides with that performance?
There's been some very good performances over the course of the season, and you know, obviously there was a concern when first Mamadou Sakho and then James Tomkins, and closely followed by Jeffrey Schluck, went down, because these are three guys that have been sort of stalwarts in the team from right the way through. But I must say, in particular, the two centre-backs, Martin Kelly and Scott Dan, have stepped up to the plate quite incredibly in very difficult games. And it's nice to see that. And we've always known that they have the competence and the ability to play in the Premier League. They were just kept out by two guys playing very, very well, and they've had to wait their chance. But it's good that they've got that chance, and good they've shown their ability too. And they've done it, as you rightly say, in games where we could have been expected to lose. Newcastle away and Arsenal away, they're tough games.
Everton next, an attractive fixture. One you and the players looking forward to?
Yeah, we're looking forward to the last three games of the season. I mean, obviously the knife has been taken from the throat, and that's nice. I mean, there's still a few teams having to play with a knife at their throat, and it's good that we're not one of them. Everton are in the same boat, so it should lead to a game where both teams have got the courage and the confidence to go out and play, because I'm pretty certain that Everton, like ourselves, will be looking to get more points to finish as high up in the league table as they can.
Are you now ready to start looking ahead to next season? Now your Premier League status is secure. Are plans in place already?
Well, I think when you're at a football club, you don't suddenly just start talking about plans. You know, there's a constant dialogue, really, between the owners and myself and the coaching staff, and not least of all with the sporting director and his recruitment people. So you, hopefully there's a constant dialogue going on, but it's very difficult to make any serious decisions before A, you know that you're going to be safe for next season, and B, you know, knowing exactly what the budget could be and what sort of finances are likely to be available. We haven't got to that stage as yet, and there will be obviously some need for us to do some serious talking in the weeks ahead and then the months ahead before the new season starts, to make certain we maximise our efforts really to get the best possible squad we can have for next season.
I think someone got lucky in the week when they asked Wilf about Champions League football. In that sense, if a player did come up to you and say, "I want to play Champions League football," how do you handle that in terms of a manager? Do you understand when people say that and ask
you? Well, I'd like to think that all of our players, I mean, I think if you're in the Premier League and you know, you finish 11th last season after such a difficult start, at the moment you find yourself sitting in 11th position, I'd like to think all of our players will be able to say they'd like to play Champions League, maybe even with Crystal Palace, because we're a good way away from it, but it's not an impossible dream. And if you're a good player in the Premier League, you know there's always going to be a lot of people looking at you and possibly coveting you. You know, we've had to deal all the time I've been here with people casting sort of covetous eyes towards Wilf Zaha and saying, you know, we would like a player like him and you are lucky to have him. So it's no surprise really when, you know, you find yourself once again having to answer the questions. But the bottom line with Wilf is that the simple bottom line, that is he signed a long-term contract at the end of last season. He was well rewarded for that. He's made it clear that, you know, his heart is with Crystal Palace. And so we've got to make certain and hope that is the case and that we will keep him for the years to come.
Would there be a plan B if a bid comes out of the blue and, you know, Steve rings you up and say, look, it's an incredible offer, it could give you the opportunity to sign three or four players? Is there a plan B in place there, or is it?
No, because we haven't discussed plans in that respect. As I sort of answered the first part of your question, we haven't discussed those plans. Obviously, I'm not ruling out the fact that something like that could come up when we sit down. I mean, it would be wrong to do that. But the point is that no one at the club has really got any interest in selling Wilf Zaha. So we're rather hoping that, you know, we won't get those offers. But I'm realistic, and it will be a club issue. And if the bids don't come to me anymore, the bids come through the chairman himself or through Doug Freeman. If one day they call me in and they say, look, this is the situation, I shall be in their hands, basically. You know, I won't be able to... I don't have the power to veto any decisions of that nature.
How much have you loved being back here? Looking back on it, you've had two very successful seasons, and then you're going into another one. Do you just look at it now and say, this is one more season, then I'll see how I go after that? Are you planning too far in the future, or do you take
no,
the season?
No, I mean, I don't even plan years in advance. I plan weeks and days in advance, and I plan really around the matches that we have ahead, and I really don't give that any thought, because fortunately I'm at that stage of my life where I don't need to anymore. You know, it is a question of how enjoyable is it, you know, how well do I feel I'm doing in terms of, you know, managing the job and doing what the job requires, and then I let all those things take care of themselves.
You're still loving it, clearly.
Oh, I like it, yeah. I enjoy working, there's no question of that. And I really enjoy working here. The club's been very good to me, and I'm fortunately enough been able to repay the fact that they've been good to me by producing the results with the players that they want.
One player we've seen, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, just impressing so much week in, week out. Now, it's voted for by the players, but a lot of Palace fans were upset that he wasn't in the PFA Young Player of the Year shortlist. Were you surprised by that?
I don't know, really. I mean, you never know whether to be surprised or not. I'd rather answer the question in the way, do I believe he deserved to be? I think there's no question of that. I think there aren't many people who've watched this season, or many people in football, really, who study players, who would deny the fact that he's had a fantastic season, that he is a really, really good young player. It's a strong group this year. There is another right back in the group. I don't know what effect that would have on the election or the voting, but as far as I'm concerned, and hopefully as far as Aaron's concerned, it should be enough for him to know how really appreciated he is, not just by us but by so many people, because so many experts this year have brought his name to the fore and said what a wonderful young player he is. It would have been nice if he'd have been in that group, but he isn't, so hopefully he will be able to put that behind him.
Finally for me, the team looks great on paper and everything, but do you see there's many changes this summer? Do you see that positions in any place right? Well, we need to strengthen there.
Well, again, it would be wrong to start talking about that anyway at this stage. We've been lucky in the sense that, you know, we've been hit with injuries recently, but for long periods we haven't. I'm very disappointed for Pape Soilé. He's done fantastically well this year, really, and on several occasions when he's got back and really started to be a strong competitor, he's picked up a minor injury. The same's happened to him again now. You know, I was really looking forward in these final games to giving him a bit of a chance, and that might still be there because his injury is such a minor one that we haven't ruled out yet that he might be fit for Cardiff and for the game against Bournemouth, but it's disappointing to see that he's suffered those setbacks at the wrong time, because he's worked so hard to get back to full fitness, and now really is very much the player he was before his major injury after the car crash.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Hello there. Hi, Roy.
Hi.
James from Premier League Productions. I just wanted to go back about, you know, your sort of hunger, continued hunger for Premier League football and life in the Premier League. I suppose one of the noose that is tied around people's necks sometimes is that they don't necessarily reinvent their methods. And I was just wondering if you've ever felt a pressure to change or update your training methods.
Not really, no, because I don't know that the wheel doesn't get reinvented. You know, the way in which we work, I think, has been relevant at all the clubs I've been at, and coming here, I didn't see any reason to doubt the relevance of it here as well, and I think that's been proven, you know, by the results we've got and the response we got from the players. I think one obviously tries to keep abreast of anything going on in the game in terms of training methods, sports science, that can give you an advantage that maybe you haven't done before in a previous period of your life, so you try to do that. But certainly I don't see any reason or that there is anything really going on in football which would suggest that some radical change in the approach that I've always had needs to be done, because a lot of it, apart from the actual physical training and the tactical and technical side, it is a question of leadership qualities really, and how you lead the team and how you manage the day-to-day things that arrive, you know, as a football manager. And quite frankly, I don't think that's changed very much at all. What we expect today and what players expect from their manager, that's changed enormously over the years. But I think I've been able to ride with that and, you know, to adapt in that way, just as I see, to be honest, all of my colleagues adapting to it.
Can you foresee it being a slightly different challenge in motivating the players to get up for these last three games, given that, you know, safety is now obviously confirmed?
I don't think I will have a problem motivating them because of who they are. The group we have, it's a very good group. It's a very serious group, a group that takes its football very seriously, and a group that, you know, is used really to needing to fight and to be at their best and to give of their best in every game. I don't see that we have the characters that will show that sort of complacency which might lead to some sort of knocking off in terms of what we've been doing. I just don't see that actually happening. But of course, the games will prove me right or wrong on that one. But I don't fear it. But of course, if we play badly in the three games and don't get good results, then I'm sure people will say, they took their foot off the gas because they were safe. I don't believe that's going to be true, but it's what will be said, I'm sure, unless we can get results in the next three games.
Have you seen that before in your managerial career, of a player perhaps taking their foot off the gas or thinking they're on the beach perhaps?
I think we lost a game in Malmo once after being about 10 or 12 points clear, and we played the final game of the season. I don't think we played very well. I remember thinking that day, I don't think they were really motivated for that, but that's about the one moment that comes to mind. It was a long time ago.
And I just wanted to ask about Christian Benteke. I've just spoken to James McArthur, and he said that, you know, the sort of relief around the squad when Christian scored that goal was,
yep,
you know, was really clear for all to see. What's he been like, you know, this week in training?
Yeah, he's been good. I mean, he was good in the weeks leading up to that game as well. Did he start one before? I think he did start one game before, didn't he? And he had a couple of appearances coming on a sub. But obviously, everyone's been rooting for him to get that goal, because it's a long time as a forward not to get one. He's had all these injury problems to contend with. So, of course, I'm certain he, like everyone else, is delighted to get that monkey off his back, and now to make certain he can go forward and hopefully finish the season as strongly as he showed he's capable of doing in these last two or three weeks, not just on Saturday, but on Sunday, but on the two or three weeks before that. And I'm rather hoping that the partnership that he formed with Wilf on Sunday, and I thought that was a very good partnership and they played very well together, we're hoping that we're going to see that for the next three games.